Ridley Scott's film Napoleon is provoking quite a lot of debate. The historian and biographer of Napoleon, Andrew Roberts, has said that of the 2 hours and 38 minutes of this film, only 38 minutes is historically truthful. It doesn't mean it's not good art, but it is certainly not great history. Have you seen the film Napoleon? What did you make of it? Are there better films about Napoleon? And what history books can you consult right now to get the true story of Napoleon Bonaparte, citizen emperor, emperor of France, world soul on horseback? That's what I'm talking about today on the Burning Archive. I'm Jeff Rich. Welcome to the Burning Archive. It's a podcast about history, culture, and I guess how we make sense of stories about history and culture in our lives today. It keeps evolving, and today I'm doing something a little bit different. I said a couple of weeks ago that I was going to move to a fortnightly schedule over the summer, but I've had to change plans. Henry Kissinger died, and then I went to see the movie Napoleon, and I was so moved by the movie Napoleon that I actually made a YouTube video about it. Which has been viewed more than my usual number of times on YouTube, has had a bit of success, and I thought I'd bring you that and one of the follow-up videos I've also done on Napoleon today on the podcast. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to first play the review I did of Napoleon, the movie, and then I'm going to play the YouTube video that I've done on some of the other classic movies about Napoleon that have been produced over the last 100 years. Can you believe it? People have been making movies about Napoleon for actually more than 100 years. And then finally, I'm going to have a brief little section at the end on some history books that you can consult to get a truer portrait of Napoleon than that presented in Ridley Scott's epic of 2023, Napoleon. And if you haven't already done so, I really recommend you do two things. One, hop over onto YouTube, check out the Burning Archive YouTube channel. You can just search for it in there, at the Burning Archive, and subscribe, and you'll be able to get all my content on YouTube. And then the other thing I highly recommend you do is go to my Substack, Jeff Rich, that's Jeff with a J, jeffrich.substack.com, and you will get there. If you subscribe there, you will follow me there. You'll get a free weekly newsletter. You'll have all my content, my podcasts, my YouTubes, all the sorts of material that I write will be delivered to you in your inbox every week. So I highly recommend you do that. And some good things are happening over at Substack, so do follow me there. Okay, let's go to part one then, my review of Ridley Scott's Napoleon. And I should add, I made a few mistakes with the audio processing of this video. Are you feeling let down after watching Napoleon? I know I am. I was really looking forward to this film. Ridley Scott, great director, Gladiator, other epics, Blade Runner, great storyteller, great filmmaker, and what a great subject. Napoleon, a complex figure, somewhat divisive figure, absolutely epic figure in history. You think you'd be able to make a great movie from it. But I gotta say, I walked away from the film disappointed. I want to tell you in this video why, but also a suggestion for something you can do to actually satisfy your curiosity about Napoleon. You would have gone to this film to say, wow, tell me something interesting, tell me something new about this figure. So what can you do about that? First of all, let me tell you about what I liked about the film, then I'll tell you what I didn't like about the film, and then I'll tell you what you can do about it to get a bit of a better insight into Napoleon's role in world history. First of all, what I liked about the film, well, the acting was absolutely impressive. Joaquin Phoenix, Kirby, the range of cameo parts by other actors as well. Just the actress who played Marie Antoinette at the start of the film, I thought did an absolutely brilliant job in a short but very dramatic cameo. And that acting, I guess, reflects Ridley Scott's skill as a director. So that's an absolute plus about the film. I also like the visual creation of the worlds of the Napoleonic Wars, the Napoleonic era, the French Revolution. I can't vouch for the historical accuracy of all the costumes and all the scenes and all the rest of it, but it was a brilliantly realized film from a great filmmaker. And that certainly puts you, in a way, there in amongst those events. The tragedy was, once you got there, he didn't really take you anywhere terribly interesting, I don't think. But I'm jumping ahead to the bad stuff. The third thing I thought was interesting was the relationship between Napoleon and Josephine. Now, you have probably seen the film already. If you haven't, you might have heard. This is a very central part of the film, and there's a lot of focus on this relationship, including reading from Napoleon's letters to Josephine, and both the silly little things that people do amongst each other, as well as their frustrations. It's a complicated relationship that's put there, but I think it is one of the more interesting parts of the film. In fact, I saw one critic say that, in a way, maybe this film would have been better if it was done as a film about Josephine rather than a film about Napoleon. So there are three things I liked about the film: the visual realization, the portrait of the relationship between Napoleon and Josephine, and the acting as well. But there were, I think, some big flaws to this movie as well. Three big flaws, in fact. Well, first flaw was character. Napoleon is really portrayed, and I think this is as much the work of the director and the scriptwriter, David Scarpa, as the actor Joaquin Phoenix. He's portrayed as a kind of taciturn, actually really unimpressive, grumpy, ruthless killer who just somehow or other ends up kind of almost accidentally becoming Emperor of France. It's a very flat and monochrome, grey and uninteresting portrait of this extraordinary figure, Napoleon, who was widely seen in his own time as extraordinarily charismatic, in some ways a genius, and in both in terms of military affairs as well as in political affairs, and that simply doesn't come across. So the character of Napoleon is really missing, and I think also there's something there in the relationship between Napoleon and Josephine that just kind of didn't really gel with such an uncharismatic and abusive figure. I don't know a lot of details. I haven't read many biographies of Napoleon, but I just found it deeply unconvincing and really a bit of a problem with a biopic if the central character is unconvincing. And then related to that, there's all the sort of subsidiary characters, some of whom are extraordinary characters. You get brief portraits of Robespierre, you get brief portraits of Talleyrand, you get brief portraits of Alexander, the Emperor of Russia, who defeated Napoleon. But none of them really rise beyond comic caricatures, I think. So
It really misses out, I think, on character. Then there is story. Well, it's impressive the way the film kind of traces the story from the start of the revolution, the 1789, French Revolution of 1789, until Napoleon's death in the 1820s. And it hits some of the big events along those times. It sort of follows a kind of chronological thing, but it doesn't really hang together as a story. And this is remarkable because the question everyone comes to with Napoleon is, well, how did this person become the Emperor of France? How did he conquer most of Europe? How did he almost defeat Britain and almost defeat Russia? How did he have such a powerful effect on culture and politics around Europe? Why do we still talk about and make films about him 200 years later? The story in this film just does not address those questions. So I think that's a big fault of the film. It kind of gets really detoured. It can't make up its mind whether it wants to do a series of epic battle scenes or the story of Napoleon and Josephine, and it just slices them together. And as a result, it is, I just think it doesn't hang together as a story. Then the third big flaw of the film, I think, is history. Now, there's been a lot of criticism of this film as being historically inaccurate, like, you know, Napoleon never did shoot at pyramids in Egypt, and he never said some of the things he's quoted as saying. Most of all, I just think it doesn't really register the significance and the turmoil and the story that is there to be asked about in the history. After all, you know, the Battle of Borodino, the relationship between Alexander and Napoleon, or between France and Russia, the Battle of Borodino and the retreat, the march on Moscow, the retreat from Moscow, the burning of Moscow. These are the events that form the basis of one of the greatest and enduring novels ever made, War and Peace. There have been some epic renditions in film of these stories, including the great Russian version from the 1960s, that perhaps give a more interesting version of Napoleon than this film. The history just doesn't hang together, and I think this is also reflected in the way in which the different battle scenes are presented. The Great Battle of Borodino, which was the most deadly and one of the I think the largest battle ever at its time, is just presented as like Napoleon charging on a horse for about 10 seconds on film. And then the number of French who died brought out a number on the number of Russians who died. So the history, I think, is way off. Just way, way off. Not just in terms of petty details, but in terms of actually conveying why Napoleon matters in the history that we still tell each other today. Reportedly, Ridley Scott said to some of the historians who quibbled about him that some of these inaccuracies were, well, they weren't there, what would they know? Which is pretty dismissive, and I guess the same question could be asked of Ridley Scott. It doesn't really rise above the long, long tradition of British sentiment against Napoleon as well. It repeats propaganda themes. It presents Napoleon as pettily resentful towards the British rather than actually realizing there was this great struggle between the peripheral empire of Britain, the peripheral empire of Russia, and the continental empire of France, and that Napoleon basically created a a continental European empire during his 15 years or so of rule. So I feel the history is really weak. And so what do we have in terms of flaws? We have the characters are weak, the story doesn't hang together, the history doesn't make sense, and doesn't help connect that story to us. If you're making a film that is a historical biopic and you don't get character, story, and film right, I think you have failed. I think Ridley Scott's Napoleon has some great redeeming features. It has some beautiful scenes. It has some great acting, some beautiful visual realization. But it's basically let down by being poorly conceived characters, bad story, bad history, and just a little bit, you know, maybe British propaganda. So what can you do if you felt like me? This was a real letdown to come back from the movies and have this film that you've been looking forward to and just finding it a really bit of a disappointing experience. Two books that you can read that might give you a different perspective on Napoleon and might actually offer you some different insight into this period of history. First of these is this book here by Dominique Lehman, In the Shadow of the Gods, The Emperor in World History. It has a brief little section on Napoleon, which I'll just briefly read from here. But more broadly, it actually looks at this very thing. What kind of person can be an emperor? What are the kind of characteristics of them? So in this book, Dominique Lehman says, unlike most of the would-be charismatic leaders who emerge in eras of turmoil, Napoleon actually was a genius. He was not just one of the greatest generals in history, winning an astonishing 61 of his 70 battles. He was also a shrewd politician and an exceptionally efficient chief administrator. He was undoubtedly charismatic, and that's the problem with this film. It simply presents Napoleon as some grumpy version of a California businessman. And then another book by Dominique Lehman is Russia Against Napoleon. This has been on my list of books to do a video on for a while. It is the account of the Napoleonic Wars with a focus on the France versus Russia side of things. It was Russia, much more than Britain, that actually defeated Napoleon. After the march into Moscow, yes, the Russian winter defeated Napoleon, but also the Russian army marched all the way from Moscow all the way to Paris and liberated Europe from Napoleon's rule. That much more than the Battle of Waterloo, which is focused on in Ridley Scott's film and in so much of the British history, was the real story of Russia against Napoleon. And this brilliant book by Dominique Lehman will give you a new insight into the true history of Napoleon, the true history of the great imperial rivalries of the early 19th century between Britain, France, and Russia. It will also help take some of the bitter taste of Ridley Scott's rather disappointing film, Napoleon, out of your mouth.
Ridley Scott's Napoleon was discouraging, it was disappointing, but it should not dampen too much your curiosity about this extraordinary figure in world history. not necessarily an admirable figure, but certainly an extraordinary figure who one should try to understand genuinely. Because I guess, in a way, his influence still ripples through the world. Certainly his example ripples through the world, and the stories and the legends told about Napoleon still make their way through the world. And he has been the subject of numerous movies over the years. And in this next segment of the podcast, I'm going to talk about mainly about seven other classic films about Napoleon that may well offer you an alternative view into this remarkable figure in world history. So let's listen into that, and then at the end of that we'll be talking about some books that you can read, some history books that you can read to understand Napoleon better. If you walked away from Ridley Scott's Napoleon disappointed, or even if you loved it, you might like to know what other filmmakers have made of this subject. In this video, I am going to share with you seven other films. They might be better, they might just be different. You can decide. Seven other films about Napoleon that will satisfy your curiosity about this great historical figure. The German philosopher Hegel described Napoleon as the world soul on horseback, and you didn't really get that feeling out of Ridley Scott's film Napoleon, did you? Historians have panned it, French critics have loathed it, and it's their history after all. And many viewers to this channel have expressed a bit of disappointment about the film too. Some have supported it, and lots of you have suggested alternative films that provide a better portrait of Napoleon. I'm going to cover those in this video. I am Jeff Rich, and this is The Burning Archive, where I share better stories about history in modern culture, in films, in books, in all kinds of media. And let's face it, Ridley Scott's Napoleon, most people agree, did not do a great job of telling a better story about history. So what can you watch on film today that brings the real Napoleon to life? I'm going to share seven alternative films about Napoleon, and stick around for a bonus list of all the films about Napoleon since, wow, the turn of the 20th century. First, about this list, I did my research, drew on viewer recommendations, top lists on the internet, IMDb, and a great article by L. Carroll on Vulture that talked about some of the best historical films of Napoleon. There are, of course, tons of films set in the Napoleonic era, and many of you have referred to those. And Napoleon appears in many films, often in comic films too. He even appears in Bill and Ted's Great Adventure. But in this video, I'm going to go for the more serious films. If you want to laugh, you might want to check the list on the video. Okay, film number one is from 1927. That's right, nearly 100 years ago. It's crazy to think we're talking about films that might be 100 years old and actually recommending viewing them. This film is Napoleon by Abel Gance, the great French director. It's a famous silent film, incredibly innovative in its time. Thankfully, in the last 10 years, it has been remastered, digitally remastered, and earned wide praise by Martin Scorsese and Steven Spielberg and other great filmmakers. You can actually watch some of these scenes on YouTube. It's a brilliant film, brilliant in its evocation and its creation of stunning early cinematic images before cinema had become too hackneyed. Absolutely one to check out. But a warning, it goes for 5 hours, so you may not want to watch it all, but do at least check out some of the extraordinary imagery in this film. The film number two is also directed by Abel Gance, but much later, from 1960. And this film is Austerlitz. Abel Gance, when he first planned Napoleon, actually planned to do 6 films about Napoleon. I guess Napoleon might be better material for like a Game of Thrones type TV series rather than a film. I think we're learning this from Ridley Scott's film. There's so much there to cover. Austerlitz, I guess, was a late realization of that plan of Abel Gance. And this film focuses on the Battle of Austerlitz, which also features, it's perhaps, I think, it's the most stunning part of Ridley Scott's film Napoleon, the battle at Austerlitz, where the cannons are fired into the ice and the Austrian and Russian armies sort of drown in the ice lake, in a very stunning poetic image. In fact, Abel Gance recreates this same scene in his film Austerlitz, so absolutely, you might want to check this film out as well. It also features the legendary actor and theatre director, film producer Orson Welles. The third film is War and Peace, from 1965 to 1967, I think, directed by the Russian Soviet Union director Sergei Bondarchuk. Now, this is, of course, a film of Tolstoy's novel War and Peace, and the dramatic rapprochement and then conflict between Napoleon and Tsar Alexander, which you get a glimpse of in Ridley Scott's film Napoleon, but really is not at all substantially covered. War and Peace is not solely about Napoleon, and Napoleon certainly is not the main character in the show, but everyone should absolutely watch this absolute masterpiece of Soviet cinema by Sergei Bondarchuk, War and Peace. And it brilliantly recreates the Battle of Borodino in a far more convincing way than in Ridley Scott's film. In fact, large numbers of the Soviet army were used in as, I guess, extras to create the extraordinary, extraordinary battle scenes of this film. Not wholly about Napoleon, but a must watch. But another very long film. It's about 6 hours. Set aside some weekend. You can watch it on YouTube through the Moss Film YouTube channel. It's in Russian and French, but with subtitles, but an absolute gem of a movie. Film number four is also directed by Sergei Bondarchuk, and he perhaps drew on some of the lessons of that great Soviet masterpiece and brought it to British American cinema a bit later in 1970 with the absolute classic that was recommended by a lot of viewers of my previous video on Napoleon Epic Fail as the best film realization of Napoleon, and that is Waterloo from 1970, starring Rod Steiger as Napoleon. Steiger does a brilliant job of conveying both the charisma and the torment and the triumph and the tragedy of Napoleon's character. It's a much more vibrant presentation. And there are brilliant, realistic scenes of the enormity of Napoleon's battles, including, of course, the climactic battle that gives the title of the film, Waterloo. Much of the brilliant cinematography that Bondarchuk used in the War and Peace film, he then brought into this film. This is a must watch, and you can watch it all here on YouTube. Number five, film number five is Desiree from 1954, an American Hollywood film, a bit more of a romance. It's the story of the love affair between Napoleon and a woman called Desiree. Napoleon had quite a few romances, it seems. Here, Napoleon is portrayed by the young Marlon Brando from the mid-1950s. The 1950s seemed to have been a bit of a time to think about the story of Napoleon in the wake of, the dramatic events in Europe in between 1914 and 1945. Again, Brando provides this charismatic version of Napoleon that you don't really get in Ridley Scott's film. And he is a much more appealing lover, a much more plausible figure to have had these many affairs than a Joaquin Phoenix's version of him. Film number six is from almost the same year. It's from 1955, but rather than an American version of the story of Napoleon, this is an updated French version of the story of Napoleon. Not as long as Abel Gance's 1927 version, but it's Napoleon from 1955. It's an epic movie that stars Jean-Pierre Aumont, Jean Bortel, and Pierre Brasseur, and is directed by Sacha Guitry. And it's also on YouTube. The quality of the image on YouTube is not absolutely fantastic, but you do get a French version of the story of Napoleon. Post-1945, and it's absolutely worth a watch. I think it's important not just to see Napoleon through Anglo-American eyes, but also, or Anglophone eyes, but also through the eyes of great Russian directors and great French directors and others. And that brings us to film number seven. That film is The Hostage of Europe from 1989. This film, again, you can watch on YouTube, a much higher quality image on YouTube. So it's actually, you know, really quite enjoyable to watch on YouTube. It's in both French and English. And it's directed by the Polish director, and my apologies if I don't get the pronunciation quite right, Jerzy Kawalerowicz. Hostage of Europe takes, I guess, a different approach to Napoleon's story. He doesn't try to cram the whole thing in from start to woe and proceed in chronological order. It focuses in on Napoleon, the man who, you know, conquered Europe and yet was defeated by Russia and Britain, ultimately, who had this enormous influence on the world, but then becomes the captive of the other European powers and is sent to St. Helena Island. You get a brief version of this time in Napoleon's life in Ridley Scott's film. This film really focuses in on that narrative and of the reflections and the brooding and the sense of tragedy within Napoleon's own mind that his grand plans kind of collapsed. It is actually a brilliant film and an absolutely brilliant performance by the French actor Roland Blanche, who provides a brilliant, inspiring interpretation of Napoleon. Much, much better than the flat boredom of Joaquin Phoenix's directed performance. So, seven great films about Napoleon, dating from 1927, nearly 100 years ago, up to 1989. By all means, go and see Ridley Scott's film Napoleon. I think it's worth a watch, even if it has flaws. But also, give yourself some time to explore with curiosity some of these other seven films and some of these different interpretations from different times of the man, the legend, and the history of Napoleon. I've also prepared a special bonus list for you, in addition to the list of kind of comic films about Napoleon. I've listed films about Napoleon that you can watch on YouTube that feature Napoleon as well, and they're just in the list on screen now. So I hope you enjoyed this video. Do subscribe for more better stories about history in modern culture, books, films. I might even do some things on games soon. So there are some great films out there about Napoleon that offer different interpretations of this figure. And of course, they're all interpretations, and it's the same with books. But nonetheless, with books, you can look at fiction. I mean, War and Peace presents a version. Tolstoy's War and Peace presents a version of Napoleon, as do many other books. I think there's a great short fiction book by Simon Lays, the Australian Chinese scholar, about Napoleon as well. But for those of us who walked out of Napoleon or left at the end of the film Napoleon and were wondering, did he really shoot at the pyramids? Did he really sort of scowl, like, you know, look vacantly into space most of the time? Or how exactly did he, you know, become emperor if he was such a taciturn sort of grump? For those of us who ask those sort of questions, I guess the first port of call is not fictional representations, whether in movies or in television series or in novels, but genuine history books. So where do you go to get a better portrait of that? Now, certainly for a start, Napoleon is a huge figure in world history, so you can go to lots of general histories of world histories, general histories of Europe in the 19th and 18th centuries, and you will get a little sections on Napoleon. It might be a paragraph, it might be several pages, so you have access to those things as well. And those portraits are often based on substantial scholarship, so you don't necessarily need to read a large number of the huge number of books to get a little bit of a sense of the historical truth about Napoleon. And as I think I suggested in the first segment on Ridley Scott's film, Dominique Levin's book on the emperor in world history is also an interesting comparative perspective on Napoleon as well. Levin genuinely does describe Napoleon as an unusual figure, a genuine genius, and I guess that probably makes more sense of, you know, how someone without aristocratic royal lineage could make himself emperor of France. But then beyond that, you may want to go a little bit further. And I guess one of the challenges here is the number of books on Napoleon is huge. There have been hundreds and hundreds of books written about Napoleon, and they often take quite contrary, differing views of his personality. In fact, one little mini bibliographical review I read described how there's golden legend tradition of lovers of Napoleon, but also a black legend of people who hate and despise Napoleon, the ones who perhaps more inspired Ridley Scott's film, who see him as, I guess, in the tradition of, or the backwards read tradition of, you know, dictators. There have also in recent years been a number of major books written on Napoleon. Now, a couple of those are in French. There's a particular scholar, Jean Toulard, who's written many major books on Napoleon, and he's been quoted in the press commenting on Ridley Scott's film, saying that he's a lover of Ridley Scott's films, and he admires the art of Ridley Scott's film, but he simply does not admire the history of Ridley Scott's presentation of Napoleon. In English, there's books by Robert Asprey on Napoleon, by Stephen England, and a series of books, very notable books, by Philip Dwyer. And I have a couple of them with me here. One, Napoleon, Passion, Death and Resurrection, which look at the post-Waterloo life of Napoleon. There's a great biography, a great biography by Alan Forrest of Napoleon. There's a fine book by Mark Broad, The Invisible Emperor. Philip Dwyer also has a brilliant but very long and very dense book, Citizen Emperor, Napoleon in Power, 1799-1815. And Michael Brewers, B-R-O-E-R-S, has a book, Napoleon, The Spirit of the Age, which looks at, I guess, the extent to which maybe Hegel was right and Napoleon was the world soul on horseback. And then also in recent times, the English historian Andrew Roberts has written a book, Napoleon, A Life. And I also think he has appeared on a number of podcasts and debates, like an IQ debate looking at Napoleon. And in general, he has a pretty positive viewpoint on Napoleon as well. And in addition, the most comprehensive and up-to-date analysis of Napoleon is by a French, in particularly his rule, is by a French historian, Thierry Lentz, L-E-N-T-Z, most of whose books are only available in French, from what I can tell, although there is a book from the early 2000s, Napoleon, My Ambition Was Great, from 2005, that is in English. I don't know quite why his books have not been translated into English yet, and perhaps Ridley Scott's film might provoke a few publishers to get out of their Anglophone bias and bring Thierry Lentz's historical works to the broader world history public. So they are some books. It's hard for me to recommend any single one of them. I went to the library, pulled out a bunch of them, and I was just a little bit overwhelmed by the number of pages. But I am going to do a video shortly on the YouTube channel that looks a little bit more at the books, also perhaps looks at some of the perspectives you can work out yourself on, you know, how to find a good history book on a controversial subject like this, like Napoleon, as well as some of the original testimonies, like the contemporary testimonies about Napoleon, including by, for example, in the memoirs of his diplomat, his leading diplomat Talleyrand, who features in the film, as well as an extraordinary figure, Madame de Stael, who was a critic of Napoleon, but a brilliant writer and a brilliant observer of his character. So I hope that is a nice little introduction to you for some good history books. What you can also do is listen to the most recent or a very recent podcast. I'm not quite sure when you'll be listening to this. The Ones and Twos podcast, which features Adam Tooze, who's an historian, and he is absolutely scathing about Ridley Scott's film. He describes how he actually walked out after the sort of Austerlitz scene. He gives some really good accounts of why, but he also provides some brilliant information about the real significance of Napoleon and that era of the Napoleonic Wars in world history, in economic history, and in military history as well. If you don't want to make your way through thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of books on Napoleon, you might want to check out Adam Tooze's recent podcast on Napoleon on the Ones and Twos podcast, or maybe also check out Andrew Roberts' take on YouTube or on a podcast somewhere about Napoleon as well. Although, if you can, I would really check out maybe a couple of those French historians I mentioned. See if you can't get a bit of a, you know, auto-translate version, because the perception and the accounts of Napoleon in the Russian world, the Anglo world, and the French worlds, and the broader continental European worlds are somewhat different. Okay, well, thank you for listening to the podcast today. Again, an unplanned but additional podcast. I think I'm actually going to be keeping up the weekly schedule now. I've got a bit of a plan, and next week in the podcast, I will be talking about that plan and the bigger themes for the podcast for at least the first couple of months of next year. We're really getting close to the end of the year now, aren't we? Thank you again for listening. Do remember to do those two things. Go to my YouTube channel, subscribe, like a couple of those videos, share them amongst your network, and go to jeffrich.substack.com. That's Jeff with a J. And join my free weekly newsletter. And if you want to, you can also support me through the Substack and get bonus content from me. In fact, I've just released for my paid subscribers on the Substack my exclusive episodes that I produced earlier this year on the podcast on Patrick White and Olga Tagarczuk back in, I think it was in like October or September. Okay, take care everyone. As the Australian summer starts to take hold, I guess the northern winter is taking hold as well. I will be talking to you, rather, in the next episode. So until then, remember, what thou lovest well shall not be reft from thee.